Monday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. Welcome back to the program. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. #250 on your mobile devices, and saying TCNT will work as well. Keep using the hashtag TCNT on a Twitter.
Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
He's here to be extraordinary about stuff involving lawyers. Now, we had a Supreme Court ruling. The United States Supreme Court ruled on Friday that President Donald Trump can use $2.5 billion in military funding to build the border wall along the U.S. southern border. Of course, that news quickly got moved off to the side in the wake of Trump's tweets. But we wanted to have you come in this morning and give your thoughts on the SCOTUS ruling.
Well, yeah, you know, it doesn't say a whole lot. It's only a three-page opinion. It doesn't really get into the merits of the case, but it's a procedural issue where there was the Sierra Club sued the president in the Ninth Circuit and obtained an injunction from a lower court, meaning they could not go out and sign contracts or do anything with this or spend this Department of Defense funding on the wall. And so there is this right in federal court when you have a situation like this where you can appeal immediately to the Supreme Court to basically stay the injunction.
Okay.
And we do these a lot, in civil litigation, you'll go for an injunction sometimes. And that's kind of the whole case, right? If you don't get the injunction, you really, whatever thing that you don't want to happen is going to happen, and you're not going to, stop it from happening. So why continue? So essentially, my opinion is I think this ends the case. What the Supreme Court said is that they didn't think that the Sierra Club had standing to challenge. So they were going to stay the injunction pending the entire process. So it gets sent back to the lower court, then goes back to the Court of Appeals to hear the administration's appeal. And if the Supreme Court decides to take it, it would go up to the Supreme Court. But all this time, they can sign contracts. They're basically, it's done. I mean, they're going to be able to use the funding to build the portions of the border wall that the president wanted to build.
So it was a big win for the president. Did it surprise you at all?
It doesn't surprise me. There's not much said in the opinion, just basically saying, you have to have standing to bring a lawsuit. And so, they said this group didn't have standing, can't challenge it. I think it would have been a stronger argument had it been some like members of Congress challenging, saying this was somehow, it was the appropriations process.
Deviating appropriated.
Maybe it would have a different decision, but here the Sierra Club wasn't going to win the day. So
right.
When you say injunctions, it's like, well, who's more likely to win? The administration? Okay, well, we're going to stay the injunction.
What was the Sierra Club's argument against?
I have, to be honest, I have not even looked at the original complaint or any of the lower opinions. I just, looked at the Supreme Court ruling. It was just said it was one of these kind of interim orders, so it doesn't say a whole lot.
Yeah, I'd be curious to go and look at it. I wonder if it was falling along those lines of, you've seen that quite a bit in the when you talk about different border infrastructure and just talking about the environmental impact and that type of nonsense.
Same argument they use against pipelines.
Yeah. It's a ridiculous argument. There is already a fence down there, when you're arguing about the migration of certain animals. And there's large swaths of the border that you can't even put a physical barrier on just because the terrain isn't conducive of that. And those wildlife that would migrate from one way or the other can always use those other locations as well.
Talking with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, the other ruling that happened late last week that we found interesting was the Covington kids.
Yeah.
The Covington kids were suing the Washington Post for defamation. Terrible thing said about them in the wake of that whole drum beating fiasco. And that case was dismissed.
Yeah. Not a surprise there. Defamation cases are extremely difficult to prevail on. You have to have a false statement of fact published, and whoever published it did so negligently. And so what happened here, this was in the federal district court in Kentucky, and the judge said, I don't disagree with the student that he didn't say what he says he didn't say, but the issue was this Native American elder that was in the other half of that confrontation relayed his opinion to the Washington Post, and that's what the Washington Post published. And that's the easiest way to get out of a defamation claim. If you're going to say something bad about somebody, you just start by saying, in my opinion, so opinions are not statements of fact. And so what the court said is that's protected speech by the First Amendment. They were publishing the the elder's opinion of the confrontation, not the facts of what happened. It's a nuance, but it when it comes to these the legal claim of defamation, it matters.
Well, and it didn't surprise me from that angle. I mean, these outlets aren't dumb. I mean, they've been doing what they do for a long, long time. We have reached a ridiculous place, in my opinion, when it comes to what qualifies as journalism and what should be good journalism. Be that as it may, the publications that are out there showing their bias constantly and their anti-Trump attitude are smart enough to know how they can craft those articles, how they can craft those editorials in such a way that they can do the damage they want to do, but also not be on the hook for anything, you know, on the legal front.
Right, right. That's exactly right.
Moving over to some local issues, and just, I mean, really kind of open up the discussion and curious to get your thoughts on this, because it seems like these laws are so nuanced, especially when it comes to the hands-free. Curious to get your thoughts, but a couple of different articles here. This one out of the Pioneer Press, enforcing hands-free law, how law enforcement are prepared ahead of August 1st. When the law goes into effect, it's clear. The phone, it's phone out of hand. According to Lieutenant Gordon Shank of the Minnesota State Police, under current law, holding a phone while doing things like talking on it is legal. That can make it difficult for troopers and police officers to determine whether somebody is legally using their phone or using it to do something illegal like live stream. Starting on August 1st, there will only be two cases in which drivers in Minnesota can legally touch their phones if they need to call 911. And for one touch voice activation. And what's funny about this, there's a subsequent article also from the Pioneer Press that says if you want to use your phone, you may need a mount. And they basically list off all these different mounts you can buy. And it cracks me up because it's like, okay, all of this is supposed to be, there's a law. Here's how you could put your phone in your car legally and still use it. I mean, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, right.
I'm curious to get your thoughts on, you know, how enforceable is this going to be? How often is it going to be enforced? And would you anticipate an abundance of sort of lawsuits and pushback on this if these tickets start getting doled out?
Yeah, possibly. You know, I see this a little bit like the old seatbelt law when they passed the seatbelt law. And then for later on, so we could pull you over just for not having a seatbelt on. It's going to be hard to determine. I can't see a state trooper sitting by the side of the road. Oh, that guy must be looking down at his phone. I'm going to go pull him over.
Right.
I think it's going to come up as, you know, you might see someone, you know, rear end somebody, and then there's the phone laying there, and you can try to figure out that, hey, he might have been on your phone. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to enforce this.
It seems to me that rather than going about the law, like I feel like nothing's going to change from this standpoint. We've all, and I see it on an almost daily basis, driving home from work, not going to work because it's dark outside, but you could usually tell when somebody's on their phone when they're driving.
Mm-hmm.
They're either driving a little bit erratically or they slowed down. And when I pull up next to them, you can see somebody's got their phone in their hand and they're looking at it, right? So now with the law, you're going to have to, Drew, you said you just went and bought a mount. I've had a mount on my dash in my car for a long time now. I think most people will probably go and do that. So the worst offenders are going to be those that still have it in their hand and the cop goes and sees them.
Right.
Like they would right now.
Like they already can.
Like they already do.
The police already have the discretion and ability to pull people over that they believe are driving distractedly.
Right. Well, I mean,
there's nothing stopping them.
Personal commentary here is somebody who sells his time for a living. If the legislature wants people off their phones, allocate enough money for enough lanes of traffic so we can get from one place to another faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We wouldn't need to be on our phones.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but that also raises that, you know, sort of that other question of why are people going? We're not addressing the root cause of why people are going on their phones in the first place.
Look, the talking on the phone is not the problem. It's the looking at the phone. It's the staring at the phone.
Yeah.
And when you and one of the downsides of this law, John, you've brought this up a number of times, is now people are going to be paranoid. You're a lawyer. You're getting an important phone call from a client. You're driving down 464. You know this call is important. You have to take it. You don't have the ability to answer it hands free. You know, but you want to take this call. So instead of just normally like, okay, grab your phone, answer the call, you're going to be like, oh, I got to look for cops and I got to hold my phone down here. You're making that all that activity more dangerous now because you're going to be trying to hide it and go out of your way to make sure that your phone doesn't, you know, crack above your windowsill so nobody can see it.
Right.
Well, and the other concern that I have is the fact that, okay, let's say a bunch of people go and get those mounts, right? And put it up on their dash. They put it on their air conditioning. That's where mine is. I think, Drew, that's where you said you, yeah, you had yours. For those that haven't used those before, they're going to have, the, they're going to make this, this shocking discovery about how nice it is to have the phone right there because you can just reach up. Mm-hmm. And you have a free hand and you can just touch it and punch into it. So I almost feel like this has the potential to exacerbate the problem for people that didn't before. Now, well, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and just be safe. I'm going to go ahead and get this dash mount and go ahead and get it. Just actually, Drew, I'll use you as the example. You didn't have a dash mount before. Nope. You're better than a lot of people in using and not using your phone when you drive, but you felt compelled to go and get the dash mount because of the law coming into effect. You will find out soon that, hey, it's right there. And when somebody goes and calls, you can see it right there.
Yeah,
and
right now, like before the dash mount, I had my phone, you know, in a little holder there. So I couldn't even see the notifications. Mm-hmm. You know, like the phone would light up from the lock screen and I would have no idea what it was and I was better off for it. Now it's staring me right in the face.
Yeah.
You know, like John texts me and is like, oh, there it is.
Might as well. Oh, it's my fault.
Yeah.
That's what you're
somebody, right. You know, somebody likes my tweet. There it is. Look at that.
Well, but, you know, but they, you know, the legislature can pat themselves on the back and say they did something to combat this. So,
yeah, they all feel pretty good about themselves.
Also on the books, another law takes effect on Thursday. And that prohibits slow drivers from hogging the left lane. Technically, the slowpoke law isn't exactly new. Minnesota has long had a requirement that slower motorists move to the right lane to allow others to pass when it's practical. The law has just been modernized to account for today's traffic. According to, again, Lieutenant Gordon Shank of the Minnesota State Patrol, for example, it comes with a $50 fine plus court fees. By the way, going back to the hands-free one, that's what I wish they would have done. I mean, going back to Dave Osmick and his law to increase the fines when it comes to the infractions, that's the way I wish we would have gone.
Yeah, like with an the escalator, like if you get caught doing it, do something else, exactly.
Yeah, that's the way that it should have gone. Right.
If you want to deter certain behavior, behavior that's already illegal, you know, distracted driving is already against the law, but if you need, you know, you need a more effective deterrent, then you increase the consequences.
If you think that it's a license to speed, said the lieutenant, think again. The law doesn't permit drivers to exceed the speed limit. It's really about maintaining optimum traffic flow. Traffic moves most efficiently when everyone is traveling at the same speed, which cannot be above the posted limit or faster than the conditions might allow. That always makes me laugh, by the way, because I've never felt comfortable with that, because if you got the fast lane that's really trucking, you got five or six cars that are flying down the road in the fast lane, like per that logic you should be able to hop right in that fast lane and truck right along with them. You know, doing 85, right?
The aggravating part of these new laws for me is you know, you guys all know that I work with a lot of breweries and distilleries, and I know what was left on the table that they didn't get from the legislature, but yet they spend their time passing
They could have done a lot of really good work making, you know, the sort of updating.
Helping businesses grow?
Yeah, making them more consumer-friendly, making a more business-friendly climate. But, you know, they had to virtue signal a little bit and get the distracted driving law.
Tell people what to do.
It'll be interesting to see whether or not, I really do feel like most of these laws are just going to kind of be implemented and that's going to be the end of it. I just don't see law enforcement really changing their behavior enough to warrant that big of a difference in these laws, or thusly anybody challenging them, you know, if they end up getting, you know, with the slowpoke wand or the hands free, a lot of challenges being put forward when somebody gets pulled over for one of these things.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the more things they throw at law enforcement to enforce, you start to dilute the ability, their ability to enforce more. And then you get the Minneapolis City Council saying we don't have more money for more cops. I mean, other cities are going to be like that. We need more law enforcement because we have to enforce all the laws you keep passing.
Right. I know. It drives me nuts. It's like, you know, there are certain areas where, you know, you want some clarity and codification when it comes to what's an illegal behavior and what's a legal behavior. But in other areas, specifically traffic enforcement, you know, give the cops some leeway. Give the cops some discretion.
Yeah.
You know, their job is to keep the roadway safe. Now, you can still be safe and break some laws. Like, you can, you know, you can exceed the speed limit, but you can do it in conditions that are completely safe. There's not a lot of traffic. There's not cars out on the road. Weather conditions are fine. It's not rainy or snowy or anything like that. You know, cops have long used their discretion to say, you know, maybe I'm not going to pull this guy over who's going 10 over the speed limit, mm-hmm. because these conditions right now are fine for that. You know, do the same, give them that same discretion when it comes to distracted driving and other traffic enforcement.
One more quick one here. You mentioned the Minneapolis leadership. They finally passed this one, and this is more for the elected leaders and staff. But starting in January, Minneapolis elected leaders and staff must start using official accounts to speak to the public about city business through sites like Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The city council unanimously passed the new social media policy Friday that will set new restrictions for the Minneapolis mayor, the 13 city council members, and thousands of employees and volunteers. The first update to the city's online rules in 8 years. A new and significant change will be the creation of city-authorized accounts for those serving in elected positions, an effort to draw a clearer line between personal and government messaging. The policy will also give the city's communication staff more influence over how public officials use social media, prompting fresh concern. The change will make for less candid online discourse. Drew, where do you fall on this? The politicians having to use the authorized accounts to communicate with the public. Were you bothered that they were using their personal accounts before?
No. No, the only aspect of it that I find a little, you know, troublesome is, you know, if you're going to use your personal accounts to talk about city business and you know, push agendas and things like that, don't go blocking journalists.
Right. That's right.
No, and that's what was happening.
Right. You know, if that's one thing I think, you know, from the president all the way on down to local officials, if you're going to get into elected office and you have a Twitter account, you should not be able to block your opposition or journalists. You should be, you know, open and transparent with your account.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I mean, there's got to be some discretion allowed there, you know, because there are a lot of trolls out there. You know, you should be able to block somebody who's doing nothing but harassing you or trolling you or calling you all sorts of terrible names, you know, but at the same time, you know, Alondra Canoe's out there blocking legitimate journalists and keeping them from, you know, seeing what she's doing. Meanwhile, she's using her account to talk about city business and talk about, you know, relevant stuff that they're trying to cover.
Right.
Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, thanks for stopping by this morning, man. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, guys.